Blog Talk Radio.
On today's show, we're going to talk to Brendan Kastner, who records his Bootsy Spankin' GI. We're also going to talk to Michael Ling, a poet living in Brooklyn, whose work I admire, so read some of her work. We'll also be taking callers. That was the song Makeshift Happy Heart by Bootsy Spankin's P.I. from the album Suburban Soap. You can find that song on iTunes along with all his other music. You should also check out his Bandcamp page, bootsyspankins.bandcamp.com, to stream all his songs from all his albums. A note, there's a new Facebook Unknown Show page where there'll be links that'll pop up. So most of the stuff on today's show, for instance, Brendan's songs, Bootsy's songs, Micah's poems, later on, you'll be able to listen to them on the Facebook page, click on links to read, and enjoy later. Spankins, his real name is Brendan Kastner. He records as Bootsy Spankins PI. He was born and raised in Toms River, New Jersey, but established as a singer and songwriter in Philadelphia. He plays modern pop songs that are smart and attachable. The lyric themes range from sex, suburbia, sadness, etc., while the music generally maintains a catchy throwback to late 60s and early 70s arrangements, i.e. Burt Bacharach and the Carpenters. I've known Brendan for a long time. I think I met him in around 2000, year 2000, at 816 Recording Studios in Toms River, a place run by Pat Noon. And I'm happy to have him on the show. Brendan, are you there?
Bud, how are you?
Hey, man. Glad you were able to come on.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a true honor.
Yeah, so I'd like to welcome you to the show. How you doing today? You all right?
I'm right. I'm hanging in there. I have to apologize. I'm a little under the weather today. I have a throat infection, but I'll just have to apologize. I'll be clearing my throat here and there, but otherwise I'm doing pretty well. How's it going in the city?
Yeah, it's going good. It's going good here. It's raining, but big shit. So, where are you from, man?
Well, as you mentioned before, from Toms River, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. I was born here and raised here.
Okay.
For those who don't know, Toms River is on the Jersey Shore, and it's a suburb. Located probably equal distance between New York City and Philadelphia. Like I said, I was born here, which is actually kind of rare for someone my age. I was born in 1981, and so it is. Almost everyone I know my age was kind of born elsewhere, whether it be Point Pleasant or Newark or Jersey City or somewhere up north. By the time I was born down here, it was a really booming area, just an area that was just developing into a suburb with all the mini malls and strip malls and the fast food restaurants and whatnot. And so I was kind of born into the town as it was developing, which is pretty interesting. But now I live a few miles south in Forked River, New Jersey, which is also on the right near the water. It's a little less developed, a little, you know, few buildings and businesses and stuff, but pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, it's more of it's a little less strip malls, I'd say, down in Forked River.
That's right, yeah, but
yeah.
It's getting to that point. They're consciously making it to that with the Walmart and everything,
uh-huh.
But it's just a landscape I can't seem to escape, I don't think.
Yeah. I'm from Jersey, too, and me and you, we came up together in the same area. And I recall going out to drink a lot with you in Seaside,
mm-hmm.
New Jersey, and just kicking around there on the boardwalk. It seems like most of Seaside is gone now. You know, the boardwalk
right.
got all fucked up. The a lot of people saw the Ferris wheel that was in the ocean.
The roller coaster, right? Yeah. Right.
Yeah, the roller coaster. How's it look down there now, and were you affected?
It looks. I'm very surprised. It still looks pretty devastated down there. I was there last week. They opened up Route 35, and I used to be. I mean, so many of my jobs that I've had growing up as a teenager, even in college and stuff, I've been over in that direction. I worked at a liquor store over there in Orly Beach. I painted houses with my friend and fellow musician, Ricky Riccardi,
yeah.
over there. I worked on the boardwalk briefly. I was a crossing guard on Route 35, which is right near the beach, over near La Valette, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of really small beach houses over there. And when they opened up Route 35, I went up there, Route 35 North, and Orly Beach is pretty much devastated. It's pretty hard to comprehend. But it's also remarkable the amount of progress that they've made from just a few months ago from when I saw it, especially over in Seaside Heights. Excuse me. It's really hard to explain, but just so much is moving and so much
uh-huh.
is going on, and there's such
yeah.
a conscious effort to get it ready in time for the summer
for
and
summer.
Memorial Day because
yeah.
Because that's what it's really that's why that town exists really. It's a tourist town, and that's
yeah.
the whole blood of the place, and I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think so too. I like going down there. I got family down there. I'll be down there. Hopefully, we'll be
mm-hmm.
me and you will be drinking some beers down there this summer.
That's
you know?
Right. I have many good memories with you and from years ago drinking over there,
yeah.
making fun of some cover bands that we would see and some bad DJs and everything. And
yeah. Speaking of that, man, what would you say for what you play with Bootsy Spankin's PI? What's your biggest musical influence? What drives your music that you're playing?
Right. As a musician, as Bootsy Spankin's PI, it's hard. I mean, like, you're a musician yourself and a fond
yeah.
appreciator of many different kinds of music. So
sure.
It's a hard question to answer because there's so many, but I could boil it down to the bands and artists, I mean, who grew up listening to, who I still love and listen to today, like... I grew up listening in the 80s to U2 and R.E.M.
Uh-huh.
Because I have an older brother, and that's really all he was listening to across the hallway from me, from my bedroom growing up. So I would just, live and breathe the music of U2, R.E.M.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen, of course, being from
yeah.
the Jersey Shore. And
yeah.
I know you're a... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man, you have to be. You know, it's like a joke, but... to a lot of people,
yeah.
you know, if you're not from Jersey, you know, of course you gotta listen to Bruce Springsteen. But he's got some fucking great shit, man. Later on, actually, there's a poet coming on, Micah Ling. She's gonna read a poem inspired by Bruce Springsteen's song. Believe it or not,
oh,
which is strange. Isn't
great,
it?
Great. I can't
yeah,
wait to hear
yeah.
it because he's. I think it's almost like a joke, like you said. But anybody from around here on the Jersey Shore,
wow.
Any musician, it's hard not to look up to the guy because he's not just successful and known worldwide, but the basis of his songs, the basis of his songwritings, of his songwriting comes from the fact that he's a blue-collar, middle-class American, and he stays true to that, and he's kind of a voice of that kind of sentiment that's very prevalent around this area, and so I love him for that, and that's why everyone around here does, I think.
Yeah. Well, leading off that idea, is like kind of like the thought, like your one of your songs, a song I'm going to play right now, which is
mm-hmm.
called Last Day of War, and it's from your album Embrace Your Local Soft Rock Station. I think that song kind of actually does, it's like the same kind of sentiment, isn't it? Like working class, everyday kind of families. How would you describe your song Last Day of War?
In that sense, I guess, I mean, that song I wrote a long time ago, but it was inspired by the fact that I grew up in a suburb and moved to Philadelphia, which is a city I love very much, with the exception of the sports. I'm a New York sports fan, but I do love the city of Philadelphia, and that's just a song more about sour grapes, about coming from a suburb, moving to a city, seeing all the cultures around there, and then feeling that you are, I guess, more natured, more like smarter, tougher, I guess, and more enlightened by living in a place like a city, as opposed to the suburb that you grew up on, and then trying to use that as kind of muscle in a relationship with a girl who is still living in that town. And it's, like I said, it's sour grapes. It's a song about me seeming like I'm tougher because I live in the city, but really acknowledging that I'm still a pussy, more or less, you know. So that's what that song's
about.
All
right. That's great, man. So I want to play this song. This is Last Day of War. This is from Bootsy Spankin's album. Embrace Your Local Soft Rock Station. You got too many albums, man. You got to stop. All right, Embrace Your Local Soft Rock Station. This is Last Day of War.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's a great song, man. I love that song. It's my favorite song you do, actually.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Can you hear me? I can't tell. Can you hear me right now?
Oh, yeah, man. I can hear you. I can hear you good.
Okay. Thank you.
There's a couple things I want to point out. I want to point out in that song that kind of actually, I think, kind of like explain my like deep affection for the music you do. And it's like you kind of have this like whole different like different slant on your influences, maybe not like your immediate ones, but things that kind of seep in there and references and stuff. Like, for instance, in that song, it's great because you reference 90210, Dylan McKay and 90210.
Right.
And then,
yeah.
I remember when I met you, and it was around it was in year 2000, everybody was listening to just, like, Tool and, like, hard rock and just music like that. Not, like, completely, but most of my friends I knew at the time, that's what they were listening to. But I remember getting in your car, and you had your iPod was a playlist of, like, 1,000 soft rock songs. it was like
that's
a
right.
playlist of stuff from our local soft rock station, WOBM. Pretty much like shit that they would play and stuff like that. And I remember
you're right. I remember making a bunch of mix CDs of all the soft rock songs that we would hear on WOBM, but I would cut out the hours of commercials and just go straight to the music. I think that was the purpose of those CDs.
Yeah, and it was like
such
a revelation how you just like fans like you were into Burt Bacharach. I never knew anybody else who was into Burt Bacharach, and I thought that was it was so cool. Like you played out those songs, and I'd be like, "Holy shit, this shit is good," and it's not like a joke. It's fucking really good music if you just get to the heart of it, you know.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm very happy to hear that because usually I'm scrambling to throw CDs and shit that are in the front of my car to the back whenever somebody gets in. There's usually something very embarrassing, you know.
Of course.
I'm glad you mentioned Burt Bacharach because that's a huge influence on me. Around that time, a little later, Harry Nilsson, who I failed to mention. When you ask me my influences, he's my biggest influence as a musician, as a songwriter.
You got me into him majorly
as well.
Yeah, my favorite song to this day is Harry Nilsson, Moonbeam song, off of Nilsson Smilsson, and that's just like the sickest song. I heard you're actually covering that. You're gonna record that.
I am. That's actually the next thing I'm recording, and not even by my choice. What am I doing? It's a song I love, and it's an album I think that really changed my life. It's funny. I bought that on vinyl at a thrift shop. I knew probably like three of the songs on that album, and just
Coconut and Without You.
Right. And actually, Early in the Morning was actually the other one.
Oh yeah, that song was awesome.
Yeah, it is. So I bought it for 25 cents. I'm like, oh, why not? I know a few of the songs. And I put it on, and it wound up literally changing my life. I became obsessed with the guy. That was about 10 years ago, maybe. And but anyway, my friend Danielle, she's making I went to art school with her. She's making a short claymation at somebody's intestines coming to life and leaving their body and falling in love. But
that's great.
She randomly asked me if I would cover that song for her movie, and I guess you came to the right place because I'm all
fuck yeah.
I'm all things Harry Nilsson. It's just I have an obsession with the guy. He's I think he writes pop songs that were simple in theory but deep thematically, and I guess I'm really attracted to art that appears very simple and self-explanatory at first glance, I guess, but the more you think about it, the more deeper emotions or unspoken truths you find in it. So, I mean, that goes beyond music, too. My other influences, I think the short stories of Ernest Hemingway, I think you're absolutely brilliant, more so than his novels. There's more to think about afterwards. The films of Todd Solondz, Peanuts comic strips, Charles Schulz. I mean, these are the things that influence me, these kind of... These works of art that appear simple and basic at first glance, but really there's so many more deeper meanings. The more you think about it, the more you look beyond it, and I try to incorporate that in my songs. Pretty much, I'm trying my best at least.
Yeah, I think you're doing it, man. I really think you are. I wanted to talk a little bit about, we were talking about, you know, some of your influences. I think you got a great cover of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Sure, and that was that was written by Burt Bacharach, actually.
Yeah.
He wrote the music for that track.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a, it's B.J., what, B.J. Thomas made it famous with a
Burt
Bacharach song, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely right. That's right.
And you recorded an album with ukulele music. It was called Lovely Laundry, and this track was on it. So I'm gonna play that song right now. This is Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head by Bootsy Spankins.
Raindrops keep falling on my head, just like the guy's feet are too big for his bed. Nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did me some talking to the sun. I said I didn't have the way he got things done. Sleeping on the job, those raindrops are falling on my head, they keep falling. But there's one thing I know, the blues they send to meet me won't defeat me. It won't be long till happiness steps up to greet me. Raindrops keep falling on my head. That doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. Crying's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining. Worrying me.
Such a great cover, man. It's the arrangement on it is so cool. It's so like to see somebody like take the care, you know, it's so easy to throw together just a you know, like a four track little rinky dink thing. But that's great how you went through all the arrangement on that.
I appreciate it. It was actually it was very fun to record. I play all the instruments on that one, except for trumpet. I would have no idea how to play trumpet. So I got my friend Dan Milius to play it, and he did a great job, truly. It's my favorite part
That's
of the
great.
Recording, the trumpet, obviously.
And you guys recorded that again with Pat Noon, 816 Studios in Toms River?
That's correct. I've been recording there for, I guess, 13 years now. But I think Pat is getting better and is great now, but has gotten so much better over the years as I've gotten better at performing music and arranging stuff, so it's always a lot of fun to work with him. It's a
good partnership, I think, working together.
Yeah, thank you. And I know you're friends with Pat as well, so you know, kind of like the backstories of all these songs and stuff. But
yeah,
it means a lot coming from you that you like these things. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I want to thank you for coming on the show, man. It was really fun talking to you. I want to play one more of your song, one more song of yours, as I let you go here. But I want to thank you for taking the time to come on and explaining some of your influences and stuff with us.
Well, I appreciate it. Like I said, and thank you for having me. It was great to talk about art and whatnot, and hopefully I could catch up with you in person real soon.
Oh yeah, I'll see you soon, man.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, bud. I appreciate it.
This is Brandon's song, another favorite of mine. It's called No Braces, No More Braces. And it's a song about being a teenager, living in suburbia, and just, once again, having sour grapes. This is No Braces. It's also off the album Suburban Soap. Brendan Kastner recording his Bootsy Spankins PI. Track him down. Check him out on iTunes. He's got a bunch of albums out, and you can stream them all on his Bandcamp page. Next on the show, I'd like to introduce Micah Ling. Micah is not an Asian man, despite what her name implies. She earned an MFA in poetry at Indiana University and teaches in the English department at Franklin College and the MFA program at Butler University. Micah has 3 collections of poetry from Sunny Outside Press, located in Buffalo, New York. Her collections are called Three Islands, Sweetgrass, and Settlement. Micah Ling runs a lot of miles and listens to a lot of music, and usually at the same time. Well, Mike, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Well, we can hear each other. Rock on.
Let's go.
Yeah. So, how are you doing today, all right?
That's an old bio, though, bud.
Yeah, well, whatever.
I'm in New York now, though. That's a crucial detail. I'm no longer at Franklin or Butler, although I still root for Butler in basketball.
Yeah.
But
I know you're in New York.
I'm 100% in New York.
Yeah. Yeah, down in, where do you live, Fort Greene, Brooklyn? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, I'm near Prospect Park in Brooklyn.
Prospect Park. Yeah, that's great. How you like it down there as opposed to where you were from in Indiana? What's the difference?
A couple differences. I'm very happy in New York, actually. I've been here since August. And despite the fact that I was hit by a car when running in Park Slope and that I had my bike stolen and that I went through a hurricane and a blizzard, I still like New York 1,000 times more than Indiana.
So in Indiana, you weren't hit by a car, you didn't have your shit stolen.
Boring, though, you know? Nothing challenging at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've ran into you a couple times here in the city, and something fucking crazy always happens. Like, I met you at a party, and you had just, like, randomly gone and seen, like, some kind of underground boxing match or some shit.
Right, that's right. I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the next time I hang out with you, we got to meet the, what was it? Colin McCann randomly was at a bar.
Cole McCann,
happy birthday.
Sang me happy birthday. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always up for anything, so.
Yeah. So yeah, New York's a little more exciting than Indiana. Shit happens here.
Definitely.
Good stuff and bad stuff. I hope you don't get hit by any more cars.
Yeah, no, I'm avoiding it, but I'm pretty happy. Pretty happy to be here.
And you're teaching here now in the city, right?
I'm working for CUNY, so I'm in Manhattan. I also teach at Fordham, so it's a good mix. Really good students. I really love what I do.
Yeah. And what do you teach there?
At Fordham, I'm just always teaching writing classes, writing and literature classes. So.
Uh-huh. And
anything you can imagine.
Do you think that teaching writing, how does it affect your own writing, or none at all?
I'd say teaching really just keeps me thinking more than anything else.
Yeah.
I've been teaching writing and literature classes for 9 years, and so I'm usually just trying to figure out how I can be better at what I do and how I can be, you know, more creative at what I do, how I can keep students laughing and enjoying it, that kind of thing.
That's cool. I had a teacher on here last week, Nate Tower, who is have you ever heard of Nate Tower? He's quite an interesting motherfucker. This guy, he's a runner too, just like you. Check this out though. He juggles while he runs miles backwards.
That sounds like Brooklyn. No.
yeah, right? That's cool. So, listen, tell me a little bit about your chapbooks with Sunnyside. Sunny Outside,
yeah. David would want to make sure we get that right, Sunny Outside. I have three collections, Three Islands. That was the first book that was published in 2009. It's about three characters, Robert Stroud, the Birdman of Alcatraz, Fletcher Christian, and Amelia Earhart, and... I don't know. It's about how we're all sort of just dealing with wanting to be alone but scared of loneliness.
Yeah.
And then Sweetgrass is a collection of prose poems, and it's about Montana. I would say that whole book is just about feeling tiny.
Yeah.
But I spent a couple of summers in Montana living in the mountains, really deep in the mountains. So.
Yeah.
And then Settlement came out last May, and it's in two acts about the Native Americans and the Palestinians, just the parallels between the two land struggles. But I would say that book is really about understanding sort of the concept of owning and how that's kind of a ridiculous concept, but one a lot of people are kind of obsessed with. So.
Yeah,
those
that's
are the
cool.
Three
collections. I found that pretty interesting. I got all those three of those books from the Brooklyn Book Fair. And I found it really interesting with your books that, don't take this the wrong way, but that they're full collections of poetry. I know I call them chapbooks, but they're like about shit. There's like, they're like books of poetry that are actually about something. So that made
I'm
them,
tweeting
like,
that later.
so appealing. Like you pointed out, like, you know, some of your book was it's from the point of view, or it's about Amelia Earhart, and then The other one, it's about Indians, the parallels between them and the Palestinians. That shit's awesome, as opposed to just, like, you know, randomly reading about, you know, like the shit I usually write about, like, you know, I parked my car somewhere. I can't remember where it is. So.
But I'm kind of a nerd. That's what it comes down to. I just get really into researching. That first book took 7 years to write, and it was mostly because I was sitting in a library with white gloves on, digging through Amelia Earhart's, you know, love letters and stuff like that. It's really because the writing process to me gets sort of tangled into research, and I really love doing that kind of thing. So.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. It's, like
it's really
totally
just
different.
My nerdiness coming out.
Right on. Yeah, you know, it's cool that you dump all that nerdiness in there instead of just, just watching Star Wars or whatever. So tell me about your current project.
Yeah, actually, I was listening to what Brandon was saying about, you know, just music that you have been influenced by, and that's totally right on what I'm doing now. It's, of course I'm researching, but I've been sort of looking at music and memory, how the brain reacts to music, all kinds of things, but also some of the core poems in the project that I'm working on now are just about my own memories linked to certain songs and certain albums. Mm-hmm. So sort of exactly parallel to what he was saying. And, of course, you guys were talking about Bruce Springsteen, so that's perfect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Isn't it? I think everybody, if you say music, they probably won't admit it, but Bruce Springsteen pops in there for a second, right? Even if it's just dancing in the dark with Courtney Cox up on stage or whatever.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I've asked people to make lists of their 10 most influential albums, and it's really, really interesting to look at, like, the crossovers, especially for people you wouldn't expect to have crossovers.
Uh-huh. You did that with me when I first met you. I met you through Twitter, strangely enough.
Yeah, strangely enough, we
met on Twitter, and you actually have another really cool project going on, review website called Ringside Reviews, right?
Yeah, right. I've been doing that for a little over 3 years. Yeah.
That's a really cool thing. What Ringside Reviews is, like, for everybody listening, it's like flash reviews. Is it like under 200 words, Micah? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I try and get it right at 200 words.
Yeah, which is cool because it's like book reviews, music reviews. If you go to a concert, you know, you can write a small review of a concert. And do you take submissions, or did I just hound you enough that you, like, took some from whatever?
No, you just hounded me enough. I'm just kidding. Yeah, we take submissions. I have a sort of a core group of writers who I work with. But we're definitely open to submissions. So if you're interested, check out that website for sure.
Yeah, check it out. Check out Ringside Reviews. Is it .net or .com? Boy, I forgot.
.com. Yeah, it's .com.
.com. Oh, you sprung for the .com. A nice
move. I'm going pro.
Yeah, you're going pro. That's awesome. The link to that is also on that goofy-ass Facebook page I made for the Unknown Show. If any of you guys are friends with me or friends with Unknown Show on Facebook, you can look around on the links and click on all Micah's crap and buy it all and join her website, call all that shit, right?
Good. Yes.
So now your poems about music that you're doing right now, the general project going on around memory, songs, things like that.
Yeah.
You actually have a poem that is on the Nervous Breakdown right now that I love. It's your poem Nebraska by Bruce Springsteen is the name of the poem.
Right.
And what's the story behind the poem? And then if you don't mind, would you read the poem?
Absolutely. This is just sort of what I was talking about before. I'm trying to capture that thing that happens. Well, actually, this is sort of the title of, I think, another poem you might have me read. But that thing that happens when you unexpectedly hear a song that sort of just rushes you with memories, sort of takes you back to a specific time and place that you can't really control. It's sort of the same thing that happens, you know, if you smell something really specific, all of a sudden, you know, you're back in your elementary school cafeteria or whatever. So I've just been messing with that and sort of been experimenting with the songs that do that to me. So this is one of those songs, Nebraska.
So you want me to read the poem?
Yeah, read the poem.
Okay. Bruce Springsteen, Nebraska. This cuts like a knife, but that's cliche, so it cuts like some specific knife. One that your grandfather gave to your father and that he gave to your brother and that you stole from your brother when you went to college because you were worried you might need to use it. But then, when you got to college, you met a man. Not a college boy, a real man. And he was the kindest man you had ever known. Suddenly, your father was a shadow. And this new man, he was how you measured men. You slept with him and you ate with him. And every moment was him, just like a lovely cliche. The secret man sang songs for you. He added your name to the lyrics to make you smile, and it worked. Sometimes he would play songs in public, in coffee houses and bars, and only you knew that those were your songs. Sometimes that man would make you breakfast or fix you a drink, and always he would call you by your name, which you loved. You don't know that man anymore, but that's okay. He kept you from needing a knife. He taught you how to ache on the inside.
I really like that poem. I like a lot of things in that poem that are, like, super big, super universal, and I think that everybody kind of feels a little bit about relating to a song. But I wanted to ask you a question about relating to a song. Now, in that poem, there's a part where you talk about the man plays songs for you on jukeboxes or whatever out in public, and you're happy about that, and it's always like a secret thing.
Uh-huh.
So what happens for you, though, when a song becomes a song between you and someone else, and then that person's not around anymore? Are you the type of person who the song dies, or do
you...
Oh,
no, not necessarily. I mean... Yeah, I think that's kind of the remarkable thing about songs. I guess it is different for everyone, you know, if you get really angry about how a relationship ends or whatever. But I don't really have that. I sort of like, I don't know, I feel like every relationship I've had I've really learned something from. So I just don't have the energy to stay angry about things. So I don't generally like hold grudges. Plus, there are so many beautiful songs out there that I can't let, you know, some other person ruin it. So it's fine. Yeah, it's fine that certain songs still take me back to memories that might be sort of painful, but it's still, you know, it's still a beautiful song, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. I just, sometimes it just sucks how that can happen with a movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's also what I'm interested in, you know? Like, that is the power, I think, of music and the link that it has to memory. It's like, if it's so crushing that it can take you back to something that happened years and years ago, that's pretty cool, I think.
It is, yeah. It is really cool just thinking about, or like, particularly like, what about how sometimes a song is so related to a movie that every time I hear the song, I think about the movie. Like every time, Brandon was talking about Harry Nilsson, like every time the song plays from Midnight Cowboy. You know, it's just like right away, it's just like, you know, just thinking about that movie, thinking about that song, they're so tied together, you know, so that's cool.
Yeah, and then tied to that narrative. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So you also have another poem that really knocked me out of the park, and it ran on the website Anderbo, which is a really cool website, some stellar writing. That's it's a great place. If you guys don't know about anderbo.com, check it out. It's an awesome place to haunt and read and submit to. Send your stuff to Anderbo. And definitely your poem on there was pretty awesome, and it's kind of getting me excited about your next release coming out. The poem is called The White Stripes Elephant, and it's in the same vein as Bruce Springsteen. It's the story behind that. Pretty much the story behind the other one, right? It's just the feeling of song and how it inspired it.
Yep.
Will you read that poem too?
I'll read this one too. The details in this poem are pretty much just true. I'll just read it. The White Stripes Elephant. Memory is fiction. Keith Richards said that. But of course, he wasn't the first. It's true. In fact,
Google it, and you'll find all kinds of scientific articles and medical blogs to back it up. Like the time a lover asked me to fly to Hawaii, and I went. And the only way I remember it is because of Elephant, which I played on repeat. But that's not true. I didn't go to Hawaii. I've regretted it more days than not. I did listen to Elephant, though. It was the only album I owned for a while, living out of my car and always managing to be clean and smelling lovely. I lost a decent amount of weight, sleeping sweaty nights in the back seat, the thick Midwest wall of humidity. And every afternoon, driving that Chevy around, painting houses and swimming in rivers, running quarries and showering at the college. No one knew, and I loved it that way. That thumping beat, I was proving myself to myself. I even had a dog, Harley Davidson, and he would look at me like the only living thing who still believed, always thinking, you've got this. And I did have this. As long as he never smelled my fear, I had this.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
Thanks, bud.
So you had a dog named Harley Davidson?
I really had a dog named Harley Davidson. Yeah, it was a Nikita.
Oh, yeah? And how old did Harley Davidson live to be? Or is she still alive somewhere?
No, I had to give him up a while back, but he was an amazing dog. He was definitely a guard dog.
Yeah? Well, that's cool as hell. Everybody should have a dog with a cool name. If you don't have one, go out
yeah.
and get one now. That's really cool. So I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I want to thank you for reading those poems. The clock's ticking
yeah,
down.
Thanks so much.
Running out of time. I hope I can drag you back on here to read some more work. Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved it. Anytime.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Right. See ya.
Catch you later. All right, so our next caller here, if he's there. Hey, you there? You there, mailman?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, listen, I gotta set this up for everybody listening. So this guy calling in right now, he's a mailman I know, delivers for the Postal Service, and I generally describe him as pretty much a disgruntled kind of guy, and I wanted him to call. I got him to call in here today so he can kind of explain his day-to-day life as a mailman and maybe share some stories with us because I think that shit's interesting. What do you got to say, mailman? Anything? What's going on down there where you're at?
I'm not really disgruntled. I'd rather just not take, shit from people. Like, just for instance, today it was great. I'm walking down the sidewalk because I have a walking route. And there's another pedestrian walking the opposite way, and he felt the need to tell me how, they moved these collection boxes 20 feet, and there's no stamps at this post office, and they just went up 2 cents. And I just asked him, what do you think I can do about this for you? It's like there's nothing. I just put the paper in the box, like, I don't make these decisions. I don't get any memos. I'm just there to, do a job. And really, I just want to, pay my bills.
You got people fucking with you all the time, right? Like, they always, what's that thing they always say? No bills. No bills, Mr. Mailman. No bills, Mr. Uncle Sam. They call you Uncle Sam?
No, nobody calls me Uncle Sam, but yes, every day people tell me, oh, no bills, and I got my three taglines, you made them, you stop making them, I'll stop bringing them,
Yeah.
I also suggest, well, perhaps I'll give it to your neighbor, and they'll pay it for you. And then they tell me that, oh, you've actually done that, you've given... my neighbor, my mail. I'm like, well, that happens too. Yeah,
oh,
I got a lot
great.
Of shit on my mind.
Yeah.
But
actually, I know you in real life, and I know things kind of turned sour a little while for you there because you had a job locally. You started out as a local mailman, and they transferred you, didn't they? How far were you driving?
I was driving about an hour and a half each way, you know, three hours a day, 15 hours a week. That's a lot of time to do stuff.
It's a long drive, right?
Yeah, I took up guitar and I bought a kid's guitar, and I used to stick the head out the window and just drive with my knee. But, Johnny Law doesn't like that. The state troopers don't like when you're occupied by other means. I wasn't on the cell phone, you know.
But you've got a pretty crazy story you told me once. I went out drinking with you, and told me this fucking awesome story about commuting to your hour and a half away job, your mail job. Do you remember that story you told me?
Yeah. I don't really suggest it, but, for an hour and a half ride to work, it's just to numb the mind a little. I may have, smoked some marijuana. And like you said, I don't suggest it. But, just to deal with the pain, I was self-medicating a little. But one morning, the first week I was commuting, I thought I was in a good spot to take a nice hit. And I wasn't. I turned the curve, and there was a red light. And it was two lanes going straight. And I went all the way over to the right and exhaled and pulled up next to a police vehicle, a canine unit, and they like to keep the windows open for the canine. And the dog just started going nuts. And, of course, the officer just kind of, I see him peek up over the top of the window because I'm in a quite small car. And I just moved my seatbelt, and I show him the little emblem, and I said, I was like, I don't know what it is with these dogs. They just don't like mailmen. And,
your emblem, the emblem for the Postal Service on your Postal Service sweater. You showed him that, right?
Yeah, and he just kind of shrugged, and the light turned green, and I just let him go ahead and, took it very easy the rest of the way to work. And then I took a couple more hits in the parking lot before I went in. But at that point, I just, driving 3 hours a day, I figured if they were going to fire me, maybe the best thing they ever did for me. I don't know. But then I got my job back locally, and my commute is much shorter, and, I don't, partake in that as much, maybe after work.
Yeah. This is America. Pretty soon, probably where you live, it's going to be legal, so fuck it, right?
Yeah. Hopefully. If not.
Yeah, right. So, man, you're also like another little tidbit of information I know about the mailman here is you're kind of like a car enthusiast, and you ripped the engine out of a little car, and you stuck a Corvette engine in, right?
Yeah. Somebody let me drive their Corvette, and on a mailman salary, you can't really can't afford a new vet. But if you find somebody's wrecked vet and they sell you the motor out of it, you could stick it in your rear wheel drive Japanese car, and it just looks like a four cylinder car, but it beats Corvettes, and it was probably an eighth of the price. So, you got to be creative, do some things on a budget. But,
awesome. And have you been racing your mail truck around, or you don't get really to rip any crazy stunts in the mail truck so much?
Definitely when it snows, on fresh snow, whipping 180s in an empty mail truck is quite easy. Again, it was accidental. I would never, do that on purpose. But
I want to commend you about one thing, man. Before I have to go, I want to commend you about one thing, and that's the fact that you told me that when you get something in the post office and you know it's a vinyl record, because you can tell, because you're not a dumbass, you can tell that it's just a vinyl record, that you take the time to delicately bring it where it needs to go, and some of your coworkers fling those fucking things across the postal office. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart as a person who orders shit like that in the mail. Thanks, Mr. Postal Worker, for taking the time to make sure my shit doesn't show up all snapped up. I appreciate it, man.
Oh, yeah.
From the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, maybe I hate my job, but,
You don't,
hate
us,
you.
Right?
Yeah. Hey, I get shit in the mail, too. I don't want my shit fucked up.
True that, man. So listen, thanks for calling in. Well, I hope you call in again sometime, all right?
Anytime, bud. See you later.
All right, later. Okay, I want to close today's show with another song by Brandon Kastner.